All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the second half of the show, our longer segments, we are focusing on the energy sector as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter. Joseph is the founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, also writes the Eye on Energy Report, which is on Substack. I will post a link to both of those reports. And if you want to keep up to date on what's going on in the energy sector, oil and natural gas, and the underlying equities, you really need to subscribe to Joseph's reports. So, Joseph, that being said, look, we're recording this on Tuesday. Anything can happen the back end of this week, but as we're recording this, really the news being that the U.S. said that they are now blockading the Strait of Hormuz. And on the back of that news on Monday, and now even Tuesday, the oil price is going down and equity markets are flying higher. Joseph, make sense of what you're seeing as what I consider kind of an insider in the oil and natural gas sector. What are you seeing that's going on in the Middle East, and what are your projections for what's going to happen?
Yeah, let's start with the politics. The Straits of Hormuz, the Americans are trying to stop any Iranian shipments. So those are the shipments that are being blockaded. If it was an Iraqi ship or a Saudi ship or something going to China or India, they're not blockading it. So about just under 10 ships a day are going through now. Normally you'd be, I think, 120. So we're way below. And, people are wondering, if Trump is holding back because he wants to give it till the next Tuesday, which is that 2-week window he gave for negotiations. He keeps on saying that the Iranians are desperate to do a deal, but I don't see that happening. They want to have a nuclear program. They're not going to give up nuclear weapons. You know, North Korea isn't going to give up theirs either because they know that nobody's going to come after them because they have long-range missiles and they have nuclear weapons. And I think Iran's the same way. But Iran also has the terrorism issue. So I'm not sure that there's a chance for a deal that the Americans can call victory versus their original goals, which were, end the nuclear program, get the nuclear material, end your support of the, terrorism, both directly or through, the Houthis and Hezbollah and, Hamas and other, groups, jihadist groups. And then the other one was, don't attack your neighbors. So the price of oil today, because everybody seems to think that the White House has got this thing under and that there will be further talks and that Iran will concede, which I'm in the camp. The price of oil is down about $7 today to $92 for WTI. That's the May month, but the June month is $4 lower, $88.58. So you can see how the backwardation is there. Brent is trading today at $95, so it's trading $3 above WTI. Going back a few days ago when everybody was worried that there was going to be war, you had a WTI trading $5 above Brent. So we're back to normal with Brent trading above WTI. So quite a change there. So my view is that we're going to see gyrations. If we don't get a deal this weekend with them meeting again in Islamabad, Pakistan, then I think we're going to see the price of oil go back up. But if a deal does come back, I think we're going to go down into an $80 to $85 environment. So below where we are today, about $7, to $85, and $12 if you're going to go to $80. And the reason I think we're going to be higher prices is we know that a lot of the, the production in the Gulf has got problems because of destruction and attacks on the refineries, on the pipelines, on the port systems. So I think that it's, the ability to get that 20 million barrels back is not going to be so easy. We may have 4 or 5 million that don't come back on. And of course, inventories globally are coming down. So I think $80 for the whole year is probably a good number, maybe higher than that. And I think that means 2027 is going to be higher prices. So once we get this resolution and the market, rationalizes itself from, where prices are going to go, $80 oil, $85 oil is very good for the industry. Cash flows will go up and the companies will spend and have a growth wedge rather than just, taking the cash that's coming in, paying down debt, doing shareholder returns, NCIBs and dividends. There will be a growth wedge. And the focus we have for companies is on those companies with a growth wedge, because we think that those are going to be more rewarded by the market and will be better performers than companies that do not have a growth wedge.
Okay, Joseph, I'm glad you went with your price targets, because that's what I was going to ask you, is that through the early part of this year, you were expecting, in a way, a quick, it almost sounded like washout in the oil price. You did have some lower targets, but it does sound like that has now all changed. Make sense of this backwardation, though, where it does seem like the forward curve never got moving to the extent that some, I think, oil bulls, but even those looking at the market, thought that it should have. The forward contracts all were slow to move. It sounds like they started to move a little bit, but now this thought that the war is going to be ending is pushing everything lower. So how should we view that backwardation of the oil contracts?
Yeah, you head into the end of the year and you're looking in the, you know, mid-70s. So from 92 in May to, you know, 70s in mid-70s in November, December, people are looking to things to normalize. I don't think they will normalize. I think the back end will go up, the front end will come down, and it will have a more normal curve rather than the backwardation that we have. So, right now, the assumption is that, there's not going to be any more disruptions. I don't buy that. I think that Iran, still has a lot of weaponry. And if the negotiations don't go well, next Wednesday on, you're going to see missiles starting to fly again and drones starting to fly again. And the Americans are going to have to, get in there and take out any of the weapons that could be, the underwater mines and anything else that's going on in terms of the coast where Iran may have ability to shoot at ships. And, maybe the convoy system comes back into talk, and other countries, the NATO countries, finally realize that if they want the oil, they're going to have to help escort it, because the Americans aren't going to do it on their own. I think even China would fall into place. I think the big hope on the war ending is China is not getting the oil they need. They get a lot of it from Iran. They could be the ones that worked with Pakistan to push Iran to go to the meeting. Iran is not conceding on a lot of these issues. So the question is, can China bring more pressure to bear? And if they do, I think that's going to, maybe give us a chance. But if Iran keeps being intransigent, then I think next Wednesday on, we're going to see the war renew. And that would be something that would push oil prices up. The longer this lasts, the higher the price of oil will go, simply because the inventories will come down. The fleets that had, shadow fleets that had oil, those have been freed up to be sold. The Americans have removed the sanctions. So all the Iranian crude that was outside of the country, all of the Russian crude outside of the, that was offshore, offshore Rotterdam, offshore Singapore, offshore China, will be offshore India will be sold to them, to those customers. And so I think that if that does happen, we're going to see higher prices. And, we do not want this to go into May or June, because we could be looking at all-time highs above that 147 that we saw in the summer of 2008.
All right, Joseph, we will get into some of the stocks, but let's also talk about the natural gas prices, because natural gas prices didn't move really all that much in this war. I understand that oil is more impacted, but in terms of natural gas, what are you seeing there? I'm seeing currently, as we're recording this, a price of about $2.57. Any hope for natural gas to get moving here?
Well, we're in a slow period now, but President Trump said all these oil tankers from all around the world are coming to buy U.S. oil. Well, they're going to start coming to buy whatever spot cargoes there are available in the United States, and that should raise the price. And once we get into the summer air conditioning season, we should see prices move up. We're $2.57 today, which is not a great price. You need $3.50 plus for companies to spend money. The data from the last week on Baker Hughes was not positive. I'll just pull it out. Baker Hughes rig count was down 6.5% for the U.S. to 545 rigs versus 583. The gas was down 3.3. They're 127 versus 105 because of all those new, Global has a new LNG plant that's up. But oil was 411, down from 472. So even though we have much higher commodity prices and the industry is getting a lot more cash flow, they're not willing to commit to spending money on drilling because they don't know, you know, what the price is going to be after the war, and they want stability before they spend money. So I think that, you know, the U.S. production is above what it was last year by over 100,000 barrels a day. So that's good. LNG component is up, but the ability for the industry to want to spend money will be delayed until after the war, and they see where the price is. And if that price is in the $75 to $80 range, they'll spend money. If it's $80 to $90, they'll spend quite a bit more money. And we'll hear that about that during the summer if, you know, the war is over. And then we'll see drilling activity pick up in late Q3 and quite a bit in Q4.
Joseph, where do we stand on these LNG export terminals? This is kind of that underlying bullish narrative that a lot of people are pointing to. I understand they've been slow to come online, but when will they actually start to impact price in a longer term sense?
Well, you know, the U.S. has been locking in, you know, a lot of it under long-term contracts. So you've seen, you know, the companies there do well, and Cheniere and others have done extremely well. We're probably looking, you know, the global plus, you know, which is Exxon and I think Qatar, that one's coming on. There's another one that's coming on after that. You know, I'm not sure who's, but we're probably going to be looking at, you know, 18 to 19 BCF of LNG in the United States exporting. We in Canada have, you know, two BCF from LNG Canada. We need LNG Canada to go FID on the phase two, another two BCF. And then we need to see, you know, Cedars go forward, which is Pembina backed. Enbridge is backing a different one, but they're smaller. But once these come on, the price will move up. The Canadian price of gas is horrible. It's $1.35, $1.40. Nobody makes money. $1.50 is your input cost. So you need $2.50 to $3 to start making decent money. They make good money during the winter, and companies that are smart and do good hedging are probably going to do okay in Q1. But, you know, you need to have those higher prices, which means more takeaway capacity from LNG. And I think that that will happen, but it may not happen until the end of the year.
All right, Joseph, time to get into the stocks. You pointed out something very interesting to me. And XLE, the ETF that follows or that is the energy equities, the bullish percentage index on March 1st was 100%. Can't get any more bullish than that. Where do we stand now? What are you seeing in the broad sector, something like XLE?
Well, the minute that people started feeling that the war was going to end and that there was a, you know, the talks in Pakistan were going to be successful, it went from 95% before those talks started, and we were last week at 38% midweek and then 32% at the end of the week, and with the decline yesterday, and we were now down to 27% bullishness. If we get below 10%, that is a buy signal for us, and we would send out an action alert buy to all of our subscribers, and we'd give them some new buy recommendations and reiterate what's the bargains are on that are on the table right now. If we get below 5%, which we did, if you remember, in April of 2025, we sent out a table pounding buy signal, because only the second time in the history of the data did we have a 0% bulls. And if you remember, everybody was so scared because of the tariffs, and stocks were very cheap. And if you were able to buy anything in April of 2025, many of those stocks have doubled, some have even tripled. So it was a great time to be a buyer. And we think that another buy signal is coming pretty soon. And if that's the case, we will put out some buy recommendations. So if you're a subscriber, you'll be seeing that in your email. If you're not a subscriber, as you mentioned at the opening, go to our website, look at some of our past research, and then go to the subscription page. And we have a choice of quarterly or annual. And we cover 32 companies. We cover everything from conservative companies, very large ones, strong balance sheets, which pay dividends, growth companies, which have a growth wedge that's important, and then entrepreneurial, which are smaller companies, but if they're successful with the drill bit, if Mother Nature cooperates and they have good success with the drill bit, then those companies could be very strong performers.
Joseph, what do you lean towards right now in terms of just oil stocks? Which ones do you think are set up the best currently in this environment?
Well, I, you know, from the oils, there's so many different ones in Canada. that you could look at that are involved in the Clearwater, that are involved in, you know, conventional, you know, like, you know, we talked about in the past, Surge Energy. Surge is trading today at, you know, 8.96. We're sitting with target of 14 this year and then a $30 bull market peak. And Surge gives you at the same time a monthly dividend that's 6% yield. So you can't go wrong with stocks like that. InPlay gives you a 6.4% yield with a monthly dividend. You know, it's a smaller entity. You know, Surge has production of 23,000. InPlay is just under 19,500. So still a nice size company and it's growing very, very nicely. So again, I think that there's so many stories on the oil side, but the natural gas side is where the bargains are. A company like Birchcliff, you know, is trading under $6 today. It has a book value of $8.20, and its NAV at the end of last year, 2025, was $22. So, you know, there's stocks on the natural gas side that are trading so much below their fair value. You know, Bonterra's another one. We have an $8 target. Bonterra today is trading at $6.42. And Bonterra, we have a $14.46 book value and a $20.06 NAV. And we have an $8 target for this year and bull market peak $25 target. So there's tremendous bargains out there. And this correction is providing you with a great new entry point. We'll send out an action alert when we think that when we're under 10%. And people can then go and buy the names they like. So what you should be doing now is, you know, getting your buy list ready. And when we get that action alert buy and the bullish percentage is under 10%, and if we're lucky, under 5%, then you just load up. In April of 25, we said to people, go to 80% of your targeted energy weighting. We will say to people now, go to 100% of your targeted weight for energy. Everybody will be different. People in Alberta will own more energy weight than people in Ontario. But the reality is we think that take advantage of the next opening window and get to a full weighting. We recommend people have exposure both to natural gas, to oil, and the service sector. And again, if you're conservative, there's lots of good dividend yields in the big caps. But if you're more entrepreneurial, you may want to have both growth and entrepreneurial. So you have that growth wedge. And those in the entrepreneurial, if the drill bit cooperates, you could see some sizable upside.
I'm curious about dividends too, because this price spike for the oil companies, at least for you, and I think for a few people, because oil was trending lower and lower, people were worried about how stable dividends were. Do we need to look at the other side of the coin now and think that some of these companies might actually be increasing their dividends?
I think they'd be reticent to do it right away. The boards would probably say, get the balance sheet pristine. So that would be goal number one. Goal number two is if they think their stock is cheap, the NCIB comes into play. And dividends, maybe you do specials, but not regular. But I think the growth wedge is going to be important because, you know, at all the conferences, you're seeing companies, you know, talking about that the customers around the world are saying, you know, where do we get more molecules? Can you do something to get me more molecules? The Siri week, that was kind of the message that came out, was people from countries from around the world that do not have their own energy are desperate to get energy from high quality, you know, countries that have good reserves and stable governments. And of course, Carney now has a majority government, so he can move through things to support the growth of our, you know, wealth, be it, you know, in forest products, mining, energy. And, you know, I think that we're going to see projects get moved ahead. And again, Carney is being requested by everybody, more natural gas, more oil. So he's getting the message when he travels around the world, and he does a lot of that now.
What about hedging too at these prices, or well, at the prices that we did see over 100? I know that companies, or at least I heard the companies, were having trouble hedging because the price wasn't exactly stable there. And again, the forward curve was much lower. Do you think, or do you even want to see oil companies hedge if we do get another price spike?
If we get another price spike, you can hedge for a month or two. Like, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, the May price, I'll pull it up again. So the May price is $92.57. The June price is $88.83. Well, $88.83 is still a good price. So hedging that and bringing that, you know, that extra cash flow in the door, or just sell it in the spot market, you know, on the assumption that, you know, we're going to have $80 once this all settles out. And I think that's the case. I think that, you know, we're going to see, you know, an $80 price environment in Q3, Q4 if the war is over. And then if you go into 2027, I think the prices could be there or higher. So I think the, you know, if you remember when we were talking at the beginning of the year, I was expecting that we might see another pullback like we did last year, but that I thought we were going to see $70 oil average for the year when most companies were using 60 to 65. And our assumption was that in the second quarter, it would be clear that OPEC does not have that 4 million barrels that everybody talks about at the time that they could bring on. And then at the end of the year, we thought in Q4, we would see prices over 80 because we would be seeing global inventories coming down from the 90 days, 2 or 3 days, which would wake everybody up to the fact that we are in tight supply and that there's no global overhang of oil. March 1st changed everything when the war started. Now my view is that, you know, going below 60 is not going to happen. Going below 70 is unlikely. That's why we have this $80 number now. And the number will go higher the longer the war lasts. And so if this thing goes into May or June, we could be looking at 85 or 90 for the average for the year.
Okay, Joseph, real quick, just quickly following up on the natural gas stocks. Any other names that you like that you can share with us, maybe that are a bit smaller, might have that growth wedge?
Well, for those who are looking for a big cap name, Tourmaline is a star that you've just got to go with. In the growth and the smaller names, I'd look at Cavvy Energy. I'd look at Pine Cliff Energy. I'd look at Alvo Petro. I'd look at InPlay Oil, Petrus, and then Yangara, which have decent natural gas weightings.
Hey, Joseph, you've been around this sector for a while. In history, can you relate what the sector is going through, what the stocks are going through right now, to any other times when you were an analyst or just active in the energy sector?
Well, the 1970s is where you had the 73 war, the formation of OPEC, the Shah of Iran was deposed. So you had a lot of things going on that were very impactful in gyrating the price of oil. And if you remember, oil was under $3 and it peaked in 81 at 36. So it went up, 12 times, and the price of the stocks indexes went up 15 times. So glorious. But it didn't mean that there weren't corrections along the way. And so that's where we think that people should be taking advantage of those corrections. And that's why that bullish percentage index is so critical. And that's why we, you know, people watch it and we all, when we have, emails, where is it? So we tell people and, you know, I'm telling people we're getting darn close to another buy signal. So get your buy list ready. Find the names you want to own. You know, some people may only own 3 to 5 names. I own in our portfolios 11 different energy related names. You know, we own service stocks. We own a lot of oil stocks. We own a lot of natural gas stocks. We own some domestic, some international. So we do have diversification, and my intention is to add to positions. I added last week when natural gas stocks got hit last week and we had a big pullback. I bought some of the names we've talked about, or one of the names we talked about on the natural gas side. So anytime you see bargains, you know, take advantage of it. You don't need to wait for the buy signal, but the buy signal tells you it's time to go to the from 80% invested to 100% weighting, depending upon what your weighting is. And again, sit down with your investment advisor, see what's appropriate for you, but definitely get to a full weighting because we're probably going to see much, much higher prices in the outlier years. And I think before the cycle is over, we are going to see all-time highs for the price of crude, and we're going to see a lot more takeovers in the Montney Duvernay, a lot more takeovers in the general light oil world. And I think the service sector, because utilization will go up, the rig count will go up, pricing power will go up, those companies will do extremely well as well.
Well, Joseph, I've been following along with you for a while, and I built up a little portion of my portfolio in the energy sector between 5 and 10 stocks. And I followed the stocks that you like, and they've done very well for me. So I really appreciate you taking time with us, sharing your thoughts on the show, and also all the names and stocks that you cover and follow within that Schachter Energy report. Again, if you want more information on Joseph's report, All you have to do is click the links in the show notes on our website, podcast, or YouTube channel. And everybody, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I hope you enjoyed our coverage, and I hope you're tuning in to our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week. A lot of information and still a lot of news coming out. And it, at least as we're recording this, has been a much better week. We'll see how it all plays out. Joseph, thank you very much for your time. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Super.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.